regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Glad that we actually have a winner in the election. This didn't get dragged out for days or weeks, and obviously very pleased with the results here. Kamala Harris, the candidate who was fine with banning handguns in San Francisco, fine with banning handguns in Washington, D.C., fine with the Supreme Court, in fact, urged the Supreme Court to rule that the Second Amendment did not protect an individual right to keep and bear arms. The candidate who said that the Bruin decision defied common sense and the Constitution just 2 years ago, soundly defeated on Tuesday night in a sweeping victory, Donald Trump. Winning back the White House, Republicans taking back the Senate. Still don't know all of the House races. When I went to bed early on Wednesday morning, it looked like Democrats might be able to take the House. But now we've seen actually a gain as of mid-morning on Wednesday, I believe two pickups for Republicans in the House. There are still a number of races that are still outstanding, but Republicans actually look like they're in pretty good shape to keep a hold of the House as well. So we may very well see a government trifecta for a pro-Second Amendment voices there in Washington, D.C., which is just absolutely huge. Now, I said on yesterday's program we'll be talking with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio. We're actually going to talk with Mark tomorrow on Cam and Company. Today, we're going to be talking with Larry Keene from the National Shooting Sports Foundation. I reached out to Larry to see if he'd come on the show because I wanted to find out what he thinks Trump's victory means, not just for the firearms industry, but really for gun owners as well. You know, obviously, we have seen the never-ending attacks on gun owners over the past 4 years. We've seen Joe Biden's repeated calls to ban so-called assault weapons. Heard his tall tales about, I was out there and got fishing and he told me, oh, you can't take my gun. And I said, why do you need 20 shots? Take a deer down. Yeah. No more. No more of that. Instead, we're going to have an administration that actually respects the right to keep and bear arms. And that's going to mean some significant changes in the executive branch. So let's talk about it with Larry Keene from the National Shooting Sports Foundation. Take a look and a listen. Larry, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you, sir.
Oh, it's a pleasure to spend time with you, Cam. How are you?
Well, I tell you what, I'm doing pretty good today.
You get one free shot at me for the Yankees' epic failure in the World Series, but
you know what, man? I'm not even thinking about that. Besides, I just watched a couple of nights ago that three-part series on Netflix about the Red Sox epic comeback in 2004. So I'm still feeling high from 20 years ago, just riding that wave. And then on top of that, we get the election results, Larry. Holy moly. I got to ask, how are you feeling today?
Obviously, it's historic. And it means a lot for the Second Amendment. But I will say, I've been predicting this for a while. I've been arguing with my wife, who was convinced there's no way Trump will win, they'll never let him win, you know, all this stuff. And I said, no, he's going to win. And I walked through the map, you know. So there are a lot of factors, obviously, in play. But, you know, the issue set, the candidates, the rhetoric, how it is that Harris got to be the nominee, all those things factored in, the economy, what's going on in the world. But or the Second Amendment, we've been saying for a while that honestly, people like me say all the time, this is the most important election, every election. But honest to God, it really was the most important election for the Second Amendment in my lifetime. I've been doing this for, a quarter of a century or more. And I believe it was the most important election. I'm so pleased with how it turned out. We still have to see about the House, but right now Republicans have picked up two seats. Very pleased. We did a historic, largest record-setting gun vote campaign to get voters registered, to educate them on the candidates, where they stand, and then to, you know, turn out the vote, get people to exercise their First Amendment rights, to protect their Second Amendment rights. Like we say, you know, don't risk your rights, gun vote. And we think we contributed to, you know, last night's historic results.
Well, you know, I think that you're right. I mean, we'll have to go through, and there are going to be, you know, people who make a living over the next couple of years dissecting the results of this election and how it played out. But, you know, I want to go back to something you said every year, and you're right. I mean, every year we talk about this is the most important election of our lifetimes. What to you made 2024 the most important election that you've seen? What? I mean, obviously we talk about, you know, Second Amendment issues at the 50,000 foot level, but what specifically were you concerned about? What specifically do you think was stopped by the election of Donald Trump?
So, one, for the industry's point of view, it will be the end of the whole of government attack on the industry by this administration, including, you know, the zero tolerance that is driving licensees out of business. I just heard yesterday of another egregious revocation that's going on with a licensee. I won't bore you with the details, but they're, you know, as an example of where they're driving people out of business, claiming that they facilitated a straw purchase when they had absolutely nothing to do with any transaction, right? And where the person was denied as a privileged person. But like, anyway, so that will end the other attacks on us, the attack to ban the use of traditional ammunition on public lands. That will stop. We will get that, I believe, reversed. Today, the administration is putting out the final hunt fish rule that, you know, further restricts the use of traditional ammunition on public lands. We'll get that reversed. And you have a candidate in Kamala Harris who has openly said, you know, she supports gun confiscation. She supports violating your Fourth Amendment rights to invade the sanctity of your home to find out how you have your firearm stored. She supports banning the most popular rifle being sold in America today, a, you know, semi-automatic rifle. So she's a radical hard left progressive. She was the most liberal senator in the Senate, more liberal than Bernie Sanders. Now, you got to get up early in the morning to beat Bernie Sanders. So she would have pursued policies and legislation. She said she would destroy the filibuster. And the Republicans have committed not to do that. And that's very important for democracy. It's so ironic that her campaign was based on, you know, calling Republicans or people that supported President Trump, you know, radicals, fascists, Nazis, all these things. Or that he was a threat to democracy, when in my mind, her policies, her rhetoric, her position over time, you know, was the true threat to democracy. And I think the American people responded yesterday by rejecting that overheated rhetoric, that dark rhetoric. I mean, remember President Biden in Philadelphia with the blood red drapes and ominous look, and, you know, it's just so ironic. I mean, it's gaslighting, right? That these people are calling President Trump and his supporters fascists and Nazis. I mean, it's gaslighting, in my view. I mean, they're the ones who want to suppress speech. Look at John Kerry. We have to, like, you know, the First Amendment is, you know, is a threat to democracy, or whatever exactly he said. But, you know, so, you know, it's just the policies, you know, the legislation we don't fear getting passed because they won't blow up the filibuster. The ability to make progress on things, like, for example, can we finally get national reciprocity? Can we finally get the Hearing Protection Act passed? I mean, I've talked to high-ranking officials at ATF as recently as yesterday on some matters, and it's like, you know, the money that would be saved if, you know, suppressors were taken out of the NFA, you know, just the paperwork for no legitimate public safety purpose, you know, things like that. Like, why are there two background checks that are the exact same check, right, being done? Why do you need to have the Form 4 check? Why don't you just have the check? Because it's the same exact check at the point, you know, where it's transferred to the consumer, you know, a 4473. So, you know, all of these things, the policies, there'll be new leadership. An ATF we won't have, but the director of ATF who runs around supporting the repeal of the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, for example. We've talked about this, but when President Trump had his like 1 year anniversary of the office to suppress the Second Amendment or whatever they called it, Dettelbach was in the front row, sitting next to Chris Brown, the head of Brady. And when Biden went off script and called for a repeal of the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act and lied yet again, saying it's, you know, it's absolute immunity for the firearms industry, the room was filled with gun control supporters. Dettelbach, wearing the ATF logo, the pin on his lapel, stood up and enthusiastically clapped. You've got Dettelbach at conferences calling for an assault weapons ban. I've never seen an ATF be so politicized. In the past, ATF has strived under both administrations, both parties, to not be political, to try to play it straight down the middle and not, you know, not become politicized, because the worm turns, the pendulum swings. And that's always the case, even on, you know, Obama as the president and Trump as the president. They tried to just be, you know, true to their mission, like just to enforce the law Congress passes and not to be politicized. But that's not the case under this current ATF, unfortunately. And we see things like, you know, these rules that they've passed, and unfortunately they're losing, where they're, you know, we've been complaining about how they exceed their statutory authority, and now the courts are starting to, you know, curtail that with some of the recent rulings. So, and you know, and the Supreme Court, right? Like,
Well, in the lower courts too, right? I mean, it's not just the Supreme Court. You know, in Trump's first term, he was able to restore some balance to like the Ninth Circuit, where you actually had, you know, parity for the first time. And you started to see the Ninth Circuit, at least three judge panels, admit, yes, these laws go too far. These laws are unconstitutional, right? And that was a huge change. So I think you're absolutely right in what you're talking about, and particularly that whole of government attack on the firearms industry, right? And it goes back to Joe Biden when he was running for president, called the firearms industry the enemy.
Did.
Right. And you and I have talked about that before.
Not forgotten that, and we will never forget that. That was outrageous.
Absolutely. And so now you've got an administration coming in that doesn't view the firearms industry as the enemy, that doesn't view lawful gun owners as the enemy, that says, OK, you know what? We want to fight violent crime. Well, let's go after the violent criminals instead of the illegal gun owners. Right. Those folks are the enemy of the law-abiding, peaceable citizens. So let's put the focus on them and not folks who are exercising a fundamental civil right.
And that's, you know, what the men and women of ATF want, right? They want to go after the trigger pullers. And their best ally in that effort is the industry. The industry is not the enemy. They're on the front lines, right? They're the ones who are the primary source of information to ATF that leads to trafficking investigations. You know, they're not the enemy. The focus should be on the bad guys, and dealers should not fear calling ATF, asking questions and saying, you know, have I filled this form out correctly? Or how do you do this? Or how do you do that? That used to happen. That has been significantly curtailed because they're afraid to talk to ATF, because they're afraid that it's going to lead to an inspection and they're going to be put out of business. So that's very important. And you're 100% right. Of course, I have said for a long time that the legacy of Trump's first term is the courts, right? Not just the Supreme Court, although obviously very, very important. We wouldn't have Bruin, for example, if Merrick Garland was on the court. So that's critically important. And the lower court, absolutely. I mean, now we need the Supreme Court to take some of these hardware cases, and they've right. got a Fourth Circuit case before them. We need that to happen to, you know, stop what I see as, you know, circuit courts that are out of control, that are not adhering to the Supreme Court precedent in Heller and Bruin. And they are, you know, I think purposely misreading or misconstruing the Rahimi decision. We just saw that, you know, in the Tenth Circuit with their age discrimination case, like that reversed the grant of a preliminary injunction on the restriction of purchasing firearms until you're 21. There were no restrictions at the time of the founding
right.
that said you had to be 21 in order to purchase a firearm or to acquire a firearm or to keep and bear a firearm. So, like, that's just off the charts. But so that's really important. It's just, you know, what I'm really also very pleased to see is that not only did he win the Electoral College vote decisively, but he won the popular vote. And that's so important because they can't say, well, you know, there was hanky-panky or like, you know, we need to get rid of the Electoral College because the popular vote is what you control, which of course would be terrible to think this country if they ever did away with the Electoral College. Because, you know, if you live in middle America, if you live in red America, you don't need to bother to show up and vote at all.
Right.
Which is exactly why our founding fathers put the Electoral College in place, you know, to balance, you know, majoritarianism where, you know, majority rules, right? You have to reach across the aisle. You have to try to get votes from everybody. And swing states change over time. I mean, Florida used to be swing state. It isn't now.
Right. Yeah.
Red. I mean, you know, it's just really historic. Now let's not screw it up.
Well, that's the thing, right? And so I want to ask you one last question, then we're going to let you get on with your day here. But, I'm curious. You talked about the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. Obviously, I think that needs to go away on day one of Trump's term. There's no reason for that office to exist. But, the more I've been thinking about this, the more I think I'd like to see the Trump administration be proactive, maybe replace the Office of Gun Violence Prevention with the White House Office of Responsible Gun Ownership, the White House Office to promote, lawful gun culture. If the Biden administration and the anti-gunners are using the executive branches as their sort of perch to go after the firearms industry, to go after gun owners, well, why shouldn't we use that executive branch to, again, restore the right to keep and bear arms, to promote the right to keep and bear arms to the American people, to say, hey, this is your right, and here's how to exercise it responsibly.
Exactly. And we'll see what he does. But yeah, and let's not forget, that office is housed in the office of the vice president. So Kamala mm-hmm. Harris was not only the failed border czar, she was the gun czar. And that, what did that office do? Right? Like, colluded with every town to sue Glock. Is what they did. So yeah, that office has to go away or be changed. So there's a lot of work to do, and the transition team will hit the ground. We'll, for example, again, it's really an industry issue. We can reverse this terrible BIS policy, restricting the lawful export of firearms to countries that want to receive these firearms, that are authorizing the import of those firearms, and restore some balance there. There's a lot of work to do to right the ship. A lot of damage has been done in the last 4 years. We're going to start right away. You know, we have the lame duck coming up. We'll try to get things done, but there'll be big fights to.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Larry, again, I appreciate you joining us on the program today. And we won't talk about the Yankees. We won't talk about the Red Sox. But
I've seen T-ball teams that can feel better than the Yankees.
You said it, not me. All right, listen, man, thank you again for coming on the show, and I look forward to doing this again very, very soon.
Happy to do it.
All right, Larry Keene joins us from the National Shooting Sports Foundation here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks to Larry for joining us on the program, and looking forward to having him back again very soon. Again, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio. I would also encourage you to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest reaction to Trump's victory, including the, I'll go ahead and say the butthurt from the gun control lobby, right? Devastated, crushing, some of the words that they are using to describe the loss of Kamala Harris on a Tuesday night and early Wednesday morning. So again, we've got that for you at Bearing Arms as well. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a story out of Chicago. And I think, again, this explains, helps to explain why we saw this significant shift to the right, not just in rural America, not just in the suburbs, but in deep blue strongholds as well. You saw Trump and Republicans making double-digit gains in these Democratic strongholds, and I think headlines like this are a big reason why. From Chicago, migrant arrested 13 times in a year is now charged with Streeterville robbery. This is from the fine folks at CWB Chicago. And it's, again, it's stories like this. I mean, immigration was a top concern. The economy was the top concern for voters, but immigration was right there. Crime was up there as well. And, you know, you can be a Democrat, you can be a liberal, you can be a progressive living in a city like Chicago or New York and still be fed up with the policies. You can recognize the policies you voted for haven't worked out. We saw that in California last night, actually. Prop 36 looks like it's going to pass handily. This undoes some of the soft on crime measures that were put in place through Prop 47 a decade ago. A belated realization that, oh, you know what, if you reduce the penalties for these crimes, you might actually encourage people to commit war crimes. So we did see that significant shift in deep blue, dark blue indigo territory. And again, I think part of it is, a big part of it, is the fact that we're seeing stories like this. So CWB Chicago reports that a 43-year-old woman intervened when she saw 19-year-old Santiago Barragas Rodriguez using a rock to try to break the lock of her electric bike in Chicago. When she tried to take her bike back, Rodriguez then swung the rock, slapped the woman, struggled with her. Police say a witness then jumped in to take the rock out of Rodriguez's hands and then detain him until officers arrived. When he was taken to court, Judge Carolyn Glennon Goodman granted the state's detention petition, noting that Rodriguez already has 3 misdemeanor cases pending, and he's been arrested in Chicago 11 times this year. He's been arrested 2 other times, apparently, in Cook County, because CWB Chicago reports that Rodriguez has been taken into custody 13 times since November 1st, 2023. Prosecutors dropped most of those cases, even though Rodriguez failed to appear in court. Think about that. Again, you've got somebody who is in this country for a very short period of time, 19 years old. And in the year, just the past 12 months, he's averaging more than one arrest a month. So when do prosecutors get serious about this? I mean, well, the 13th time's the charm, I guess, right? May 20th of last year, he was accused of shoplifting. On pretrial release at the time for allegedly shoplifting from another store, both of those cases were dropped. Arrested for trespassing on April the 4th for allegedly refusing to leave a hospital parking garage. Prosecutors dropped that case a couple of months later. Failed to appear in court 3 other times. Didn't show up in May 16th for a case accusing him of assault and criminal trespassing. Prosecutors dropped the charges because the alleged victim didn't show up either. He was a no-show for a hearing on March the 7th for a case involving allegations that he shoplifted from a Home Depot. Prosecutors dropped that case, didn't show up. December 12th of last year for another shoplifting case. Once again, CWB Chicago reports prosecutors dropped the charge because the store didn't send a representative to court. So part of this is not just on the prosecutors, right? I mean, if you don't show up in court, then prosecutors are going to drop these cases. But that didn't happen every one of those times. Sounds like there are plenty of times and plenty of opportunities for the prosecutors to pursue these charges against Rodriguez. They just haven't. Well, hopefully the victim in Rodriguez's latest case does show up for these hearings. And maybe, not counting on since this is Cook County we're talking about, but maybe you can see justice done here. Speaking of justice being done, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, a tragic story out of Macon, Georgia. Here's the headline: self-defense at center stage in Macon murder case that ended with a not guilty verdict. This was a case, it sounds like, of domestic violence that ended with the victim being forced to shoot her husband. Tanita Schoetz on trial for murdering, allegedly, her husband, Vernon Schoetz, who was shot and killed at the apartment that they shared in Macon, Georgia. According to WMAZ in Georgia, during the course of the trial, then became pretty clear that the couple had struggled with domestic abuse, that Vernon Schoetz had struggled with PTSD from his military service. And the night that he was killed, he apparently had not taken his medicine. A police report said that Schoetz started approaching his wife, armed with a gun. She grabbed the gun from him, urged him to stay away. When he did not, that's when she pulled the trigger. In court testimony, Tanita Schoetz said that she was in fear for her life in the moments before she shot her husband. It was a week-long trial. Jury announced its decision last Friday, finding Schoetz not guilty in the death of her husband. Schoetz attorney Deborah Gomez said the jury deliberated for under an hour before acquitting her of all charges. And she said, while she believes the jurors got the decision right, she says it doesn't negate the tragic circumstances that led to the shooting. She said there was a man, an honorable veteran, who died. This is not a victory. It is a conclusion to a very sad and tragic event. And that's exactly what it sounds like. You know, some of these armed citizen stories that we cover here, it's somebody who is clearly in the wrong, clearly in the right frame of mind, but doing the wrong thing. Invading somebody's home, breaking into an ex's house, and trying to do them harm. It doesn't sound like that was the case here. In fact, it doesn't sound like Tanita Schoetz wanted to hurt her husband at all. But she didn't want him to hurt her either. And unfortunately, it got to the point where she needed to act to protect her life. So, this isn't one of those stories that I cheer. In fact, I wish that I didn't have to report it. I wish that this hadn't happened. I wish that Mr. Schoetz had taken his medicine and continued to get the help that he needed, and the couple were both safe and sound. But that's not the case. And I guess I am thankful, not I guess, I am thankful that even though this was a tragedy, that Tanita Schoetz was able to protect and defend herself. Now on to today's good deed of the day: in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And Edinburg, Texas, public works employee who saved the life of a newborn baby off the clock. He was actually sitting at home watching TV when he got a knock on the door. And it was his neighbor, Monica Rivera. She had her 7-month-old daughter with her. And Larry Ayala, who's her neighbor, says that she was frantic. Her baby wasn't breathing. And she asked him, "Do you know CPR?" Thankfully, Ayala did know CPR. And he was able to revive the 7-month-old girl. Said he could feel her body warm. He could feel her start to breathe again. And it looks like she's going to be okay. Said he was very grateful that he remembered his training. But again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And to save a child's life, Larry Ayala, the Assistant Public Works Director for the City of Edinburg, Texas, we thank you for your very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. And I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I want to thank you for getting out and voting yesterday. And I want to thank you for, again, caring and defending this fundamental liberty that we talk about, our right to keep and bear arms. We will be back tomorrow with another edition of Cam and Company. Mark Walters from Armed American Radio going to join us on the program. We're going to talk about what can be done to strengthen and secure our Second Amendment rights in the years to come here. Got a fantastic opportunity to put our right to keep our arms on solid ground for decades to come. What's the first step? And what's the step after that? Well, again, we'll talk about it with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio on Thursday's Cam and Company. In the meantime, like I said, be sure to check out bearingarms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, including reaction to Donald Trump's historic victory. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.